Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. You're tuned in to Hard Rock Radio Live, where the music doesn't suck. I'm your host today, DJ Lovely Laura, and joining with me live, I have multi-finger tapping pioneer, lead guitarist Steve Lynch from the 80s rock band Autograph. He's been up to a lot these days, like producing. He's an author. He's also the owner and instructor of Federal Way School of Music in Seattle, Washington. He also has a new solo album out and is the creator of a teaching site called lynchlicks.com. So let's welcome Steve Lynch. Hey, Steve, what's going on?
Hey, not too much, Laura. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for coming on the show.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right, so what's been going on? You're a very busy guy. Are you kind of a workaholic or something?
I try not to be, but it seems to end up being that way all the time, though. That's okay.
So what are some things going on with this really cool school that you're doing right now, this school that you own?
Well, I've had this open for about 5 years now, the Federal Way School of Music, and I just got together a bunch of teachers and decided to open up a school and offer the community to play, where, you know, all the kids and adults could come to learn to play. Together, I have a few art teachers and bass instructor, percussion, drums. I've got two piano teachers, two vocal instructors, sax, flute, violin, viola, cello, clarinet. Yeah, so there's a lot of instruments there. So,
all right, very.
I get to pick my own hours, so that's nice.
So, what's it like being a teacher?
Well, I've done it for so long. I basically started doing teaching when I graduated from the Guitar Institute of Technology back in 1979. After I had written my first book, I started writing that actually in 1978, finished by the time I graduated in March 20th, I think it was March 20th in 1979. So I started teaching after that, you know, kind of for about 32.
So what are some of the lessons that you've learned that you've passed on to your students and some teen musicians that have come up to you?
Well, a lot of the theory, what it's like to be in a band, writing songs, you know, how to be very professional. That's one of the things, is that, you know, being able to, you know, really professional outlook and be on time with everything. Really respect that, especially in LA. And, you know, playing with the big boys in the big recording. And I thought that was, you know, a great lesson that I could pass on to them, and how to conduct themselves in a band and make sure they wrote as much as possible and try to really work on their own technique, not to follow others, like as far as, you know, the speed, arpeggio suite, all that kind of stuff. That's all good to learn, but you got to also follow your own path, and I really try to push onto my students as well.
So how is it that you learn your own technique? I mean, everybody's influenced by someone that they look up to. So how can someone develop their own original style?
Well, I would say take a little bit from a lot of people. But after a certain point, like I did when I went to the Guitar Institute of Technology back in 1978, I just stopped listening to everybody. The only people that I really listened to were the people. And I picked up different things from them, but then I applied my own style to it. But I had been influenced so heavily by Hendrix, Jeff Beck, Jimmy Page, and, you know, Eric Clapton, and all these people. And the last one that I really listened to was Alan Holdsworth. And that was while I was going to school, and I thought, you know, I'm starting to sound like him. I want to do something that, you know, I have more of my own original style. And so I just stopped listening to everybody, and that was it. And what really helped was the theory that I was learning enabled me to do that, because once you have that ammunition, all that theory, then you can pretty much make up your own style. You can approach different interval skips and different arpeggios and scales and everything the way that you really want to do it, because you have the knowledge now to know what to do with it, rather than relying on other people that already know how to play and taking their licks from them. Like I said, it's nothing wrong with borrowing a few ideas from a few other people. The basic thing is it's really important to concentrate on your own style of writing and your own style of playing. Very important.
All right. So what are you seeing in some of these younger musicians as far as their style and how their techniques are and the way they play for this new age?
I see a lot of the 80s techniques coming back.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I see in a lot of the newer players, like in Avenged Sevenfold and stuff like that, you know, different stuff my students bring in, and I go, wow, that sounds like an 80s guitar player. How old is this guy? And I'll say, oh, he's like, you know, 21, 22 years old, and I just go, wow, because that really sounds like an 80s guitar player, which is great, because that, I thought that was the epitome of guitar right there. Rock guitar was the, I thought that was by far the best decade. Playing, and then the 90s kind of took a vacation, and then it started to slowly but surely come back after the 21st century started, and I was glad to see that. Now there's some really great players out there really fast onto the scene.
And so you live that rock and roll, that 80s rock and roll, you know, famous lifestyle as a musician. What do you tell some of your students, or, you know, people that come up to you that want to know what it was like to live that dream?
Well, I tell them it was just a fantasy coming true, because basically, you know, you're out there playing, you're recording. The first time that you hear your song on the radio, that is just such a huge rush. You just feel really good about that. And then you get out there and you're selling records, and you're on the radio, you're getting a lot of radio play, and you get out there on stage in front of, you know, 20,000 people.
Right.
Lights go off and everybody's got their lighter. At that time, they actually let you use lighters up in the air.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, exactly. So, and you just hear this thunderous roar, and then you just come in and you just start wailing. And a lot of the shows, for a couple tours, it would just meet me and the drummer that went out on stage, and we would just rip it up for like a minute, and then the rest of the band would come out. And just to hear that roar from the audience was just the biggest rush you can possibly imagine. It's such a cool high, and just being able to create in the studio, you know, create your own music, create your own solos, be able to create your own sound and cultivate that and master it and going from it, and out on the tour bus with you know, the partying and everything, that's great, of course, too, you know, nothing wrong with that.
And the girls.
it's all just a great experience, you know, it really was.
I thought they still did hold lighters up. I still do that, even in the local clubs.
Oh, well, yeah, I do too. Actually, I will, if I go to a concert that I really like, you know, then I'll hold my lighter up in the air as well. So
where were you? Where did you play your first show? And where were you when you first heard the first autograph song on the air?
I think we were actually on the tour bus when we first heard it. That was the first time. We're heading out to a gig. We had toured with Van Halen, and then we came back. We quit the tour with Van Halen and came back and did our first album, because RCA was getting anxious to get us into the studio for the album, you know. And so it was actually after the Van Halen tour. A lot of people don't know that our first album came out. It came out January of 1985, and the tour that we did was with Van Halen started in January. With them for months, and then we got off the tour and came back into LA and sat down and started writing. Then it was done by October, but they wanted to release, you know, have a first of the year. But the first time we heard the song was on the tour bus heading to a gig. I think it was going out with Motley Crue, and it might have been before that, actually. It might have been with Aerosmith. But that was great. And the first venue that we played with Van Halen, that was Jacksonville, Florida. I remember that. We had to drive from L.A. to Jacksonville, Florida. And that's a long drive.
So which band was the craziest tour? Was it Motley Crue, Aerosmith?
Yeah, it was definitely Motley Crue.
Yeah, I would think so.
I mean, after the Motley Crue tour, I didn't remember 6 months of that. And so I just thought... So that's it. I actually quit drinking for 4.5 years after that tour, because it was way over the top. It was a lot of fun, but it was way over the top. I'd wake up on their tour bus. Some of them would wake up on our tour bus. It didn't matter, because we're going to the same city that, you know, the next day. But still, it was just absolutely crazy.
Yeah, Vince actually appeared in one of your videos, Loud and Clear, with Ozzy Osbourne. And did you guys kind of plan that?
Yeah, we invited both Vince, Neil and Ozzy Osbourne to come down, and they both came down, and we're glad to do it. And they were friends of ours anyway, so we just thought, because we had already known Ozzy, and we hosted a Headbangers Ball, I think We might have done even two Headbangers Ball with them. I know we did two different shows on MTV. So we were friends with him and Sharon, and so, you know, we called up Sharon and said, hey, can Ozzy come down to this? And Sharon said, I think he'd love to do it. So he did. He came down, and he was a great sport.
All right, so...
Yeah, both of them. We just had a great time with them while they're down there filming. That was filmed down in Long Beach.
I love in the video how the girls are getting into the music in the very beginning, and then Ozzy and Vince don't get into it until you rip out that guitar solo. Did you ever notice that?
I think the song kind of went from fourth to fifth gear at that point, and so Ozzy always liked my playing, and so there was actually a time after Randy Rhoads when I had talked to them about doing that, but I had already had other commitments. And so it didn't work out. But you know, that's cool because, you know, it went off with Autograph and was able to do that, so that worked out.
Wow, I'm surprised you passed that by.
Well, it was like I was already kind of tied up with the Autograph thing. I really couldn't turn that down. And that was part of my band. You know, with Ozzy I would have been, you know, just a sideman in Ozzy's band. I might have been a writer, but I think that most of his material was already written for the next album, and I wanted to be in on the writing.
So how important is it to know how to write music when you're a musician? And there's a lot of shredders out there and things like that. What do you tell the musicians out there about writing?
Well, this is one thing that I always taught in the clinics, too, and I still teach to this day, and that's that spend as much time writing as you do and recording, you know, even if it's just on your home computer system, as you do actually practicing, because believe me, there's plenty of guys out there that can shred. I mean, if you go onto YouTube nowadays, your bedroom's just ripping it up. But the thing is can they write? Can they write anything? And that's the most important thing is the writing, because sure, that's great if you can be, you know, a really great guitar player. You want to do that, but you want to have originality in your style. And you want to be able to write as much as you can. And don't just write in one genre. Try to write, you know, on an acoustic guitar. Try to write in different styles. I'm not saying if you're a heavy metal guy, try to write a blues song, or a country song. But just try to write in as many different genres of, you know, the heavy metal scene with acoustic and stuff like that for a lead-in into the song so that you make it more diverse, more dynamic.
All right. Now, you have this hammerhead style. You're known for the two-handed technique that you have. Where did you learn that?
Well, actually, I was doing a little bit of it when I was up here in Seattle. There was this guy, Steve Buffington, that used to play, you know, with like one or two fingers up here, and he showed me a couple of things, and we were pretty young at that time. And then I saw Harvey Mandel do a show at... Vic's downtown Seattle, and I was very young. I wasn't able to actually, and I watched him at soundcheck, and I had to watch through the back door because I wasn't able to get in. So I started messing around with that way back then, and that was probably back in the early 70s. And then when I went to the Guitar Institute, this guy Emmett Chapman, the guy who invented the Chapman stick, in which you play with both hands on the fingerboard, your left hand plays bass strings, and your right hand plays thinner strings, like just like on a piano. And so your hand is playing two different sets of strings. And he mentioned while he was teaching the clinic that he actually came up with that instrument because he'd gotten so far with doing this technique on guitar. And at that point, my ears just kind of, my eyes lit up, and I just went, wow, on guitar, you know, because I thought this instrument was totally separate from guitar.
Right.
So when the clinic was over, I asked him, you know, I said, what were you talking about? You got so far with this technique on guitar that you had to come up with this instrument to further the technique. And he said, well, let me see your guitar for a second. You know, so he just sat there, and there was about a dozen of us still sitting around after the clinic, and he just showed me this. He says, look, you play this pentatonic with your left hand, and you play another position of the pentatonic with your right hand, you know, And he just went bloop, and he just came off with this really fast run. And I, wow, that was just amazing. And this was at the beginning of the school year, so it was in the beginning, much of it was probably March or April 1978. And so everything that I learned from that point on, all the scales and all the arpeggios, all the triads, everything, interval skips and everything. I started to write down two-handed, and so that I would be able to, you know, figure out how to play them with both hands. So I actually was writing them down. I was writing them down on guitar graphs, so it looked like a guitar neck, and I, that way I could see the patterns that I was doing. And by the time, you know, the end of the year, I had like a few hundred pages of this written out. And so, you know, I put, you know, about 75 of those pages into book format, and that's how my first book got written. And so a lot of people thought that it came around after, you know, Van Halen came out, which I think they came out the latter part of 78 or 79, something like that, the first album. I don't remember exactly, but it had nothing to do with him, actually. There was I was way more interested in the whole jazz fusion kind of thing. I mean, I wasn't really listening to radio much. I was listening, like, you know, the guys at the school, and at the time, like I mentioned before, I was listening to Alan Holdsworth and Al Di Meola, people like that, and John McLaughlin.
All right. Now, you have a very, very interesting story that we talked about off air about Jeff Beck, and I definitely want you to tell the listeners out there about that.
Okay, yeah, well, Jeff Beck, I actually saw back in, I think, 70, 71 at the Paramount Theater in Seattle, and he was playing with Beck, Bogart, and Appice, and he was having a terrible night that night. He equipment kept on screwing up and everything, and so what happened was, you know, he took off his guitar, threw his guitar, he went off stage for like 10 minutes. Nobody even knew if he was coming back on or not, but he did come back on, and he island, and he finished the show and everything. But I wanted to wait around till after the show and see if I could get a guitar pick from him. And so I waited around and I could see, you know, Armin Appice and Tim Bogert get into a limo, and I saw them take off. And so there was one limo left, and so I knew it was Jeff Beck's. And so I just hung out there, and it was just pouring down rain. Of course, not unusual for Seattle, but that's what it was. And so anyway, he finally came out, and he was standing in the doorway in a big argument with his tour manager. I thought, oh boy, this isn't the right time to approach him at all. My friend kept on saying, "I do it now." And so as he was walking up to the limo, I ran up to him and I said, "Hey Jeff, I know it's a really bad time right now, but could I please have a guitar pick?" And he kind of looked at me like he was going to hit me or something, you know. But he just opened up the door and he says, "Yeah, come on, mate." And so I got in the back of the car with him, and he was like, "Here, let me find you one here." And so he's going through this Pan Am little flight bag thing, and he dug up one, and it was a little Herco heavy pick, and he gave it to him, and he patted me on the back, and he said, "Good luck to you, mate." And so I thought, wow, that was like the coolest night ever.
Yeah.
You know, and so what I did was I used that pick for years and years and years, and I wore it down to a little nub, so I couldn't even use it anymore. So what I used to do is I just put it in my hip pocket, and I carried it around in my hip pocket as just like a good luck charm. I thought, hey, you know, if I ever run into him again, I'll give it back to him and I'll tell him the story. And sure enough, I did. Back in about 1986 or 87, I ran into him, and he was at the NAMM show, the National Association of Music Merchants show down in Anaheim, California. And I was backstage at that, and at the Kramer party, and hit him back there, and you know, he was talking to Roger Fisher art and everything, and he was playing this guitar that lit up with different LED lights and everything that Roger Fisher had that he wanted him to check out, but he really couldn't play it much because he had a broken thumb, and so that was from working on his cars. And so anyway, so he handed it to me, and so I played this piece that I had written, and it was a two-handed piece, and Jeff Beck just kind of looked at me, and he was, like, bewildered, and he just went, "Wow, that was really cool, mate." You know, and I thought, wow, Jeff Beck just said that. That was,
yeah.
Somebody good at that on recording, you know, because I was just in awe of him, you know. And so anyway, I proceeded to tell him the story about, you know, that I was this kid back in you know, 1970, 71, and he gave me a guitar pick, you know, and I wore it down to a nub, and he said, "Wow, you were that little kid that was standing outside the Paramount Theater that night when he remembered it because he had such a bad night that night. All his equipment was screwing up." So I said, "Yeah, that was me," you know, and he says, "Well, wow, how do you like that?" You know, so anyway, then I told him my name, and he had heard of me. He goes, "Oh, yeah, you're that bloke that just did what you just did, that two-handed stuff." And I go, "Yeah." I go, "Yeah, exactly." You know, so I said, well, I have a gift for you. And I reached into my hip pocket and I gave him back the guitar pick. And I said, this is the guitar pick you gave me. It was worn down to nothing. And he just laughed and he thought, that is really cool. He told me that's like the coolest thing ever. You know, he says, I'll treasure this, mate. He says, you know, and I thought that was just great that he was able to, you know, that I was able to share that with him and he was able to share that moment with me as well.
Yeah, that's a great story. I love that story. All right, so tell me about the lynchlicks.com. What's going on over there?
Well, what I did was I came up with, you know, like some of my best licks, 100 of my most favorite licks, you know, really diverse. A lot, there's like 50 picking licks, and then there's 50 two-handed licks. And what I thought was I'll give people a really good diverse selection of things that I've done in the past and things that I've done, you know, like in the present. And so I recorded all the videos in one day. So it's 100 guitar, excuse me, videos. And so what it is it's you know, very inexpensive to buy. I think it's for all 100, I think it's like $129, something like that. But you get the video, plus you get the tab for it. So it's me explaining it to you, slow motion, step by step, how to do each different lick on video, and then me playing it at full speed, of course, as well. And then I put on 11 new guitar solos, and then we're also adding on 7 older solos, and they're solos from the Network 23 album, and some autograph stuff that was never that wasn't released back in the 80s. It was stuff that was released off of some demos that we had actually recorded for Epic Records, which we didn't end up signing with them. Because I quit the band before we did, actually. But they are demos that Steve Plunkett actually released on a 1997 album, so the solos never were heard before. And so I did some of the solos off of that as well and showed people how to do those. But they weren't anything that Autograph had done back in the 80s, newer stuff. And then on that site also, I remastered, you know, the 3 Autograph albums, and then plus the Missing Pieces album. That's the one that he released from stuff that we had never released before. And then I remastered my Network 23 album, my solo album, and I have those on there, and I have them on there for I think $9.95 each. So it's like they're a much, much better sound than the original. And then I also have my instructional books, all 3 of my instructional books that you can download in PDF format, so then that way you can look at them on the screen and you can see exactly, you know, what you want to do with them, which you want to learn. And it comes with CD with each one of those, so you get the audio for each one of the books as well. And then also my instructional videos on there. So it's got a lot of stuff on there. It's like 2.5 gigabytes worth of material on that thing. So it's got a lot of information on that site.
All right, you guys.
Technique, and people want to learn, you know, a lot of different diverse licks, and that's a good place to go.
All right, you heard him. You guys go check it out. Once again, lynchlicks.com. He also has a really cool website over there for all the information about Steve Lynch at stevelynch.info, because I was checking out some of the really cool articles and things over there as well. Are you running that site?
Yeah, that's actually my website guy's running that one as well. So I don't really have time to do that, but he runs it and keeps it up to date. And so you know, it lets people know what's going on. But I get a lot of information out to the people on Facebook as well. So
do you still talk to the guys in the band? I mean, I know Stephen Isham had passed away in 2009, but do you still talk to any of the guys?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, at this last year's NAMM show down in L.A., or down in Anaheim, California, I got together with Randy, the bass player, and we hadn't seen each other for, I think we figured 21 years.
Wow.
And so long time. It was just great to see him, because Randy was my roommate on the road, and we just had just such a great time together. We were always really good friends and just partied our asses off and had a great time. And so it was just really cool to see him. And he's doing really well. He's been married for 18 years now, and so he's got his own business, you know, working other and everything. He makes dog collars, wristbands, and all that for Easy Rider magazine, all that kind of stuff. And so he's had that going for quite a while. He kind of dropped out of playing, but than Steve Plunkett. I talked to him last year. He's done a lot of TV, like commercial jingles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He gets a song in a movie. And but usually they use autograph stuff for movie stuff because like Hot Tub Time Machine, you know, they use that as like the theme song for the movie. So most of the time they'll just use autograph stuff because we made it public domain, which means they don't have to ask us permission to use it. All they have to do is record. We made that international as well, so through BMI, anybody can use any of our material without our permission, just as long as they pay. Otherwise, they get in trouble.
So did you get recognized a lot out there when you were out at NAMM? Do you still get recognized? People remember who you are?
Yeah, there was a few people that still did, but it was, of course, a younger crowd, you know, and I was kind of glad that I didn't get recognized as much, because when I used to go in the 80s, I used to get mobbed so much that I wasn't able to really look at all the new equipment or anything. I was constantly just signing autographs and talking to people and taking and that was great, because I love the fact that, you know, I mean, you're very fortunate to have fans, and one thing I do believe, always, never, ever turn down an autograph, you know, always sign an autograph for people. Respect the fact that they really respect.
Hey, Steve, can I have your autograph?
Yeah.
Are you still endorsing Crate?
No, no, I haven't been endorsing anybody basically since I quit the band.
Oh, really?
Because I use such a variety of guitars and amps and everything and recording equipment and effects that I don't want to really endorse anybody, you know, that I would have to, you know, stick with just using. Of course, nobody does anyway, but no, I don't endorse anybody right now. I just keep to myself with that kind of stuff.
So tell me, how many guitars did you have total and all, and how many do you have now, and tell me some of your favorites.
I had 36 was the most that I had, which isn't a huge number, but I had 36 and I only paid for two of them.
Wow.
Which was nice. I mean,
yeah.
I had that that Les Paul, in which I had posted on my Facebook site, you know, recently, which was a 1955 Les Paul custom, and I bought that one, and then I had a Stratocaster, which was an older Strat too that I had, and those were the only two that I paid for. The rest I got basically thrown at me from different people, like guilds and stuff. But I stayed with I signed Charvel, but when Wayne Charvel and Grover Jackson split up, Wayne Charvel went to Texas, and Grover Jackson stayed in San Dimas, California, and I decided I was going to stay with Grover Jackson because, you know, him and I were friends, and me and Wayne were friends, too, but Wayne was moving to Texas, and I wanted to be able to go down and pick out my wood and everything, so we took all the Charvel guitars that I had, and Grover, you know, sanded off, he had the guy sand off the headstock and put Jackson on it instead. So that's why some people see, you know, the same guitar, but with it, in how early the picture is, it'll say Charvel on it, and later pictures will show Jackson. Well, they all are the same guitars. It's just name off of it, and Charvel name off and put the Jackson name. But, I was with them for quite a while, and then I was with Fender for a while, and Ibanez, and so I'd kind of been all over the map there for a while, but like I said, when I quit autograph, I stopped endorsing.
Right. So what are you playing right now?
A variety of guitars, whatever I need for recording. You know, I have a few Gibsons, I have a few Fenders, I have a few Guilds, I have a few Alvarezes, I have a few Ibanezes, you know, Epiphones, you know, Yamaha acoustic, nylon string guitars. Just a variety, a real variety of stuff, you know. So it kind of depends on what I need for recording. And I have 23 right now because, you know, I gave a lot of my guitars. In fact, I gave all of the 80s guitars that I had, I gave them away. They were either guitar contest magazines, you know, the contests in magazines that they were having in the guitar magazines, and I gave those away, or else I gave one away to the... Rock Cafe in New Zealand, and then I gave about, five away to the Hard Rock Cafe. And so they're out there floating around somewhere. I don't even know which Hard Rock Cafes they're at. But they're out there somewhere. I've heard some people have said they saw them one in Maui, they saw one in London, they saw one down in Orlando, Florida. So they're out there.
Yeah, I think I saw one of those articles where they, the person had to pick out which guitar looked most like yours, and then they had a chance to win it or something over there on your website.
Right, right, exactly, yeah. And so that was one of the contests. I actually put that information out there. So,
yeah. You should do that for your students.
What, give away more guitars?
He acts like it's such a bad thing. They're your babies, I know.
It's not a bad thing, but I'm paying for them now.
This is true. All right, so I know that Steve Plunkett decided to do the new version, Bring Back Autograph, in 2002. Were you approached by him about this, and what was your up-and-up decision about it?
Well, yeah, he approached me about it, but the thing is that the songs had already been written, and, you know, he sent me a tape of the song, and I just, I love and appreciate what Steve does, but I think he does it better when he has co-writers, and I didn't really think the material was very strong, and so I said, well, look, I would be glad to play on it, but I would have to rewrite a lot of the stuff with you, and it would have to be a combined effort. But he had already written the stuff, and I did my pass on it. Besides, I was already busy with my own project, you know, and so I thought, well, I'm not going to take time off from this. That if the songs are already written, then it would be just like I'd be just a guest on his album, which I really didn't want to do. It wasn't Autograph. Autograph was all of us, putting in the effort together. And so it didn't sound like an Autograph album to me, not at all. In fact, it doesn't when I listen to it now, it doesn't sound at all like an Autograph album.
I don't guess I've heard the new stuff yet.
Well,
who did he get to join the band? Anybody?
I basically only listened to it one time, and then I listened to a couple of songs more recently, and I just went, this is an Autograph, you know, this is Steve Plunkett's solo work is what it is.
Right.
Not really Autograph. He was just using the name, but
was he the only original member in the band?
What's that? Was he?
Yeah.
Oh no, we formed the band together.
No, the new band.
He just gave up the name. He asked when I quit, he asked if he could use the name, and I said, I'm not going to use it because that Autograph was, you know, what it was back then. And if we didn't have the same people in it, then it wouldn't be the same. It's just, you know, the equivalent of, like, Led Zeppelin going on without John Bonham. You know, I'll never use it. You know, if I just can't imagine that, you know, not having the same people, Autograph sound, or even trying to get the Autograph. At that point, I think it's best to go on and do something different.
Well, you know, you see a lot of bands getting back together today. A lot of 80s bands, and I think some of these, the younger generation, they really do like some of that stuff.
Oh, yeah, they love it, because, and I know why. A lot of it has to do with the fact that, A, it was all about partying, it was all about good time, it was all, you know, all the songs are all about sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and you know, but it was very lighthearted, you know.
Right.
You know, it was all about having fun, you know, and being young and appreciate, you know, the fact of, you know, being an American and being free and just having a great time in the 80s. It really, I think that the 80s really reflected that a lot. And so, you know, and then the depression of the 90s came along.
Right.
A lot of the Seattle bands, which, you know, it was all about suicide and heroin, and I just thought, okay, I don't want to really be that anymore. you know, that's what happened. It seemed like the music went from a really happy time to a really sad time during the 90s. It was just like everybody was depressed, and it was cool to be depressed, but I never got into that, so.
I didn't either. In fact, I stopped listening.
I recognized that, wow, that really was fun music. I mean, whether you're listening to Duran Duran or Def Leppard,
right,
or Autograph or whoever, you know, it was really fun music. You know?
Yeah, it really was. Because I stopped listening to a lot of stuff in the 90s. I just didn't even... I mean, I still just listen to a lot of the 80s stuff. 70s and 80s, I think.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Like, yeah, let's have a good time. Let's not be depressed.
So now you're older, your writing skills are different. What are you trying to put out nowadays that you're trying to show your fans as far as your music goes?
Well, I think the most important thing is that I'm not trying. I feel like, you know, what I write now is just stuff that I just feel like playing. You know what I mean? It's like during the 80s, I had to think of things like, okay, is this going to be presentable for radio? And I was still thinking that way even when I did my solo album. Even though I was a little bit freer, I didn't really care that much about radio play. I felt more like doing my own thing, but still in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, is this song too long to be put on the radio? But I never even pushed the album that way, because by the time the album came out, I was already thinking of the next batch of songs that I was playing, which was really different from that one. And so right now I have the freedom of just playing whatever I want to play, and I really don't care about radio play at all. All I care about is playing what I feel, and you know, hopefully people will like it. And it's not really to sell albums, it's just to make people feel good. That's all it's really about.
So can we expect to see you maybe out there doing any live shows?
I think with this new batch of songs that I'm writing and recording right now, that's a possibility, because this is me unhinged. It's like exactly what I feel like doing. And you know, what I would do is, if I was to do that, of course I'd put together some songs from the Network 23 album and some Autograph stuff and go out there and tour. But the main thing would be, you know, just what I'm playing right now, you know, just expressing that to people. And it would depend on how much attention it got. That's really what it all depends on.
Well, you know, you have some great fans out there. I remember when I was posting the interview on the Facebook page, how many people just really admire you. And is there a special fan? I know that you're really close to them over there on your page over there, and you really communicate with them. Is there someone that really stands out that just said something to you that really, really just stayed with you?
Well, you mean recently?
Yeah, recently, or just through your life.
Well, you know, there is one. There's this young girl, Megan, and her little brother, Colin. And please don't disturb them on Facebook. Please don't, because they're just kids. But their mom was a big Autograph fan, and she always told them about us. And they live up way up out in the middle of nowhere, up in Alaska. But please don't disturb them, because they're just kids. But they started writing to me after their mom had passed away, and it really affected me. And I kind of adopted them as their uncle. I said, you can start calling me Uncle Steve, you know. I sent Colin, her younger brother, some stuff on how to play guitar, and so he's like an avid, you know, Autograph and Steve Lynch fan now, and he's always practicing and everything. And I've just kind of adopted them. And that, to me, just like kids that are, you know, in that kind of a situation where their mom has passed away and they just have her memory of favorite band and her daughter Megan, which I think she's only 15, 16 years old, was searching for, you know, people to autograph on Facebook, and she found me. And so we got to be friends, and so now I'm their Uncle Steve.
Aww. That's a great story.
It turned out really, really cool. I was really, really happy about that. You know, it just made me feel good that I was able to help them out. And now I'm actually, you know, like, Colin always, you know, her younger brother always emails me and say, please, Uncle Steve. Have Megan, you know, allow me to play 2 hours before I have to do my homework instead of 1 hour. You know what I'm... God.
Oh, who knew you were such a sweet guy?
He only gets an hour of practice before he goes into, you know, before he has to do his homework. And I just, you know, I'm just having a gas with it, I think.
That's really awesome. All right, Steve, well, we're just about out of time here. So if you've got anything else to say to the listeners right now about what's going on with you, please do it now, and then we'll take off.
Well, just the lynchlicks.com thing, if they want to go check out, you know what I have on there available for guitar players. And then if people just want to, you know, check out my videos, some more of the recent stuff that I've done, they can go to www.youtube.com/lynchlicks, and you'll see a bunch of, I think I have 11 new guitar solos posted on there. And then you can just kind of let me know, you know, on Facebook or whatever, what you think of them. I like to hear your feedback. And of course, there's more new stuff coming your way. I'm still working on it. And so, anyway, I want to thank you, Laura, for the great interview. And I want to appreciate your listeners, tell you how much I appreciate your listeners. And it's been great.
All right. Well, it's my pleasure. I think you're an amazing guitar player, and keep doing what you're doing. I bet your students just love you to death. And hopefully we'll get you back on the show if we find out you're out there doing some shows again, maybe here in a few months.
I will definitely let you know. You'll be the first to know.
All right. Hang on one sec. All right, you guys, I hope you enjoyed that live interview. We just got finished up here with guitar tapping pioneer Steve Lynch from the 80s rock band Autograph. So you guys, I'm going to have this podcasted up later on tonight over there on the Facebook page. So if some of you just came in halfway during the interview, you can check it out over there. So we're going to keep kicking it with some more Autograph coming up next.